Where in UP are you from?
Actually, you know, to be very honest, and maybe we can talk about this on the podcast. I'm not sure how you are recording.
I'll tell you that. At this point, I've already pressed record and we'll get into the zone. I just don't like to, you know, like sure. beach mein stop. Record karenge. Haan, you were saying.
Perfect.
So where in UP are you from?
Yeah, I was born in Lucknow. And basically, my grandmother retired there. Not sort of retired there. My grandmother's from Jabalpur, my nani. I have no other grandparents that, you know, that were alive in any communicable manner. I had my dadi alive for a very long period of time, but I only remembered her sort of strapped to a bed because she was paralyzed. But my family, the way it works is that my grandparents were also in the army. My nanaji was in the army. My dadaji was sort of assisting the army, etc. And he was a railway doctor. And they both died when my mother and my father were really young. My parents were really young. And the only grandparent I've had to speak of in terms of stories and everything is my grandmother. So the way I picture it is I'm from Lucknow. But the way my father would picture it is that he's from Jhansi, which is at the border of UP and MP.
Yep.
And then he obviously attended college in Moranipur, actually in Rewa. Rewa is a small town. It's like Kota in Madhya Pradesh, basically. All the MP kids go to study there, all the in the heartland kids also tend to go there. So I see myself from Lucknow and mostly with like UP sensibilities, except that my Tauji, for anybody who reads Hindi and Vyang is satire in Hindi, he's a very Bhopali guy. So we have those influences. That he's a writer, he's a Gyanpeeth Award, he's a cardiologist also. Mostly he writes. So maybe the sense of humor, because I relate where you come from, I think has to relate to a couple of things. What you eat, what you laugh about, what is your circle of trust? Because laughing and eating is related to circle of trust. It's something very, very fiduciary in nature. And so I grew up in Lucknow. Then I went to Calcutta for about 5 years. So I spent about 8 years in Lucknow, then 5 years in Calcutta. Then I came to Delhi. I grew up in Delhi. Did most of my schooling from Delhi, you know, at least the schooling that one remembers. And it's kind of ironic because what one remembers is not what has impacted them mostly. So what you're impacted by, from what I've read, is 1 to 6 years, which is not what you remember, to be very honest. And then I went back to Cal for my law, and then I came back to Delhi. So I spent about 10 years in Cal in all, 6, 7 years, 8 years maybe in Lucknow, and the remainder of my tenure, so to speak, which is over a decade, decade and a half.
In Delhi. Right? You know, to answer your question about why you don't remember, say, 1 to 6, which is, say, the developmental part of your childhood at all, is because you're building procedural memory, which is very different from episodic memory. And episodic memory is all about, right? And procedural memory is about how you walk and how you ride the cycle and like stuff that you need to do as processes. So you have a great memory of the processes from then, but very little of episodes that were guiding those processes. And that happens only later. Yeah.
I'm so glad I'm talking to you because I thought I have to rehash all of this. And we all know where this comes from, you know, episodic. I think this is Brett Weinstein's podcast.
It could be. Maybe I got it off a Jordan Peterson lecture. I can't really say.
Yeah, exactly.
Like it's roughly around the same circle.
This is that ecosystem which people are, "Arey, tu to bahut bada right winger hai, Jordan Peterson sun raha hai, yaar, bro. Main to maps of meaning sun raha tha. Matlab mujhe kya pata tha ki aise explode hoga."
For sure, man. Acha, so were you aware of the guy even before like he blew off into the scene?
Definitely. Actually, it was strange because before Jordan Peterson happened, I mean, I was in Berkeley at a very opportune time. And as I told you, you know, I have left leaning sympathies, whatever that is. I mean, on issue based ideas.
Bro, you were at Berkeley. Like at that point, like you'll get injected with left leaning tendencies if you're at
Berkeley. No, this is before I went to Berkeley. Berkeley actually rid me of a lot of these.
For sure. It's a little bit much, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't want, I realized that, again, you know, I'm a believer in, and this is coming out of, actually, this is coming out of a confession because I don't want to piss off a lot.
Right.
So I'll be very, very honest. Right. So as much as I don't want their allyship, the tag of an ally and whatever comes with it, because I like to think on my own and I like to do things on my own, while that might put me on one side or the other. I do not want any medals. And I'm sure they're not distributing medals. What ended up happening was that I went in anticipation of medals, I guess. I don't know what it was. But for me, it wasn't that. It was basically the protest outside Simon Hall in the 1968-69 civil rights movement. The speech that was given by Martin Luther King on the steps of the Simon Hall. And I read all of that. Fulbright scholarship pe maine yehi sab likha tha. Pata nahi kaise mil gaya, bhagwan hi janta. And so I was like, great, yeah. So I bought into that. I mean, I'd already bought into it, but I bought the addendum, the codicil. And I said, this is great. It's like a Kickstarter project. I'm buying it, you know. Hmm. I went there and I realized, oh man, like the more classes that I went through, you know, I remember this very distinctly. How best to frame this to maintain the anonymity of people involved is the question. But there was a class, there was a professor that I really admired. And I remember because that was the trigger point. And it was very early in the course. And we were discussing, I was presenting on the right to the fundamental right to privacy, Putu Swami judgment had come up at the time. And I was speaking to it, and somehow some point of privilege was brought. I don't remember what exactly it was, and even if I do, that would probably be too many details. And there was this girl in the class, you know, most of her family in the US, Indian girl, Indian citizenship. Most of her family in the US, and you know, all the privileges that you could associate with class, much higher than that. The only thing she had working for herself, and again, the framing, excuse me, but the thing that she had working for herself was the fact that she was a woman, you know, a cishet woman. Right. And but I am obviously further down that pyramid of intersectionality. And she said, well, how could you be making these claims, you know, about judicial politics in India? Because my presentation was on judicial politics and the fundamental right to privacy, how the court likes to speak on stuff which is slightly ambiguous, slightly abstract, and slightly in the context of the politics that plays out, likes to present itself as a liberal institution, but really touches issues which are not really touching many lives, which cannot be commented on. By except for that, you know, people like us, koi Berkeley jaake baat. So she said, that's not true. And the fundamental right to privacy has these bearings for women. And I said, yes, that's true. But none of this is discussed in the judgment. Blah, blah, blah. Cut to all of this. I was working for the International Human Rights Center. At Berkeley, we were investigating, actually the Advanced Human Rights Lab. And we were investigating some Syrian war crimes. And we had these two cool German guys who were basically had this startup to figure out through machine learning and AI, you know, the coding on a weapon, you know, they could figure out, I don't know how this works, is like magic to me, but if a bomb fell, they'll be able to tell you, you know, through various analysis of various information that is collected, you know, that is socially aggregated, they can tell you, kisne giraya, kya kiya, bagaira, bagaira. So anyway, we were sitting in that meeting and something, it went to some sort of lunch session where people were like, oh, what do you eat? What do you eat? I eat beef, I eat this, whatever. And this person sort of turned around and not saying as much, but implying that, you know, this person is just trying to impress you with this, ki beef khata hai brahmin hai, jo bhi pakate hai. But actually,
they said that about you. They implied that about you, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But actually, you're top of the food chain hai, and which is fine, which is true. That statement is true. As a cishet individual who's top of that and who, frankly, my parents did all the groundwork for me financially. So even class included, that's a true statement. But the context is important, right? And the statement that preceded it is untrue, which is that he's trying to do this with this intention. And that's when it struck me sort of that, because everybody sort of believed this person who had like her nanny cooking for her, you know, just across the road. And I felt really bad about it. And I sort of realized that, actually, none of this matters. People can, it's not even that intention doesn't matter. It is that intention is ascribed to you via media, you know, and that is the problem. The problem is not that intention doesn't matter. That would be an easy problem to resolve. Due process wise, whatever our traditional understanding. The problem is ascription of intention while being, and I don't want to use this term in any manner that, that triggers anyone, but I'm going to, you're being gaslit, you know. In a manner, you're being told intention doesn't matter, but at the same time, to corroborate and buttress a point, you're being told actually this is what your intention is, and you know, and the way that ambiguity is carried to its logical end in that argument is that we are the holders of this particular experience. You know, whatever is unfolded here before us today, our lived experience trumps yours. And in that particular case, because lived experience is important, and a lot of the, and I'm not hedging, right? Because it is important in certain cases, right? For instance, you ask an under trial who's in prison, in some prison in Maharashtra, in a district where casteism is practiced. I'm giving a very specific example. You could extrapolate to anything. Caste does play a role. Lived experience does play a role. The normativity of that experience as propounded by the person who's suffering it does play a role. As opposed to the formalist affidavits that are submitted in court by prosecutors, by police agencies. But those are the ones that are held to a certain standard of virtue. You know, ye authentic hai, ye bakwaas. And I think that is where due process sort of has lost its value. This historical experience of marginalized communities. So lived experience, obviously, and this is one example that I can think of. There are hundreds of examples. But I think, again, because of that mission function creep, you know, as one would say, what ended up happening was this, what I felt was it was a completely, it was a malappropriation. It was a deployment with ulterior motives of these notions, of these ideas that are whatever, intersectional discourse or whatever people call it now, postmodernist, Marxist, pata nahi kya kya. But I felt that ye sahi hai, matlab ki main India se aa raha hun, scholarship pe padh raha hun. And what am I offering? What is the perspective that I'm offering? Oh, you know, it's in a conversation, it's around a bench. And I'm just simply saying, you know, your ideas of the fact that I'm an upper caste is great, but I eat beef, which is all true. Right? And it is not even in a topical setting, it is in a luncheon set. And for people to take offense in that setting, in that context, was absolutely absurd to me. And, you know, it really highlighted. So that was one. The second was when I was just walked along with some Antifa bunch of people walking. And main unko wo kar raha tha. Mere ko laga, yaar, bada achha hai. Main to video record kar raha tha.
Right.
Aage aage bhagte na, and we're like Dolores Park jayenge.
Right. San Fran mein.
It was not Dolores Park. It was Berkeley. So we were going to the marina, I guess.
Right.
Some University Avenue Street. And somebody just turned to me and went like, just whacked the phone out of my hand, you know, and they were just like, you, whatever, you're not supposed to record. And I was just trying to ask them questions. I was like, okay, why am I not supposed to record? Because I'm here with a great friend of mine. There had been a Brazilian guy, Felipe.
Right.
The biggest Casanova that you've seen, a classic character out of some sort of play. You
know? Right.
And he and I share the same sense of humor. We're both very self-deprecating. Over daato ka mazak uda. And that's the shared bond of trust that we share. I think it's sacred. Nobody gets to say anything about that because as long as we're aware that we're with each other.
Right.
Ab to maine usko dekha, so he said, boss, I don't understand. Mereko to laga tu politics mein. Isliye main teko leke aaya yahan. So I said, oh buddy, this is very weird.
Right.
So I said, you know, why do you throw my phone? Like, what is this thing? And just that question triggered them to such an extent that, you know, they were just like, get out of this whole thing.
Yeah.
They actually chased us away in a way.
Right.
And, that is also like, you know, these absurd outcomes, which have, there's no way of looking back at it. There's no way of justifying it. Somebody wants to.
Right.
It'll probably be because of some industrial purpose. It won't be for academic, intellectual, honesty, truth-arriving purpose. So I just did not think about it further. But what it ended up doing in my head was, I realized, right. So this, the function creep and mission creep with all of these linguistic technologies, let's call them that, can go to such an extent that not only do we have to discuss language as violence, but we're probably not permitted to discuss that at all, you know, because the way that framework works, when you are in the midst, in the seat of that framework, which is what Berkeley is, maybe not true for India, where people are contesting these spaces, where the seat is a white berth and everybody's sitting on. But in the seat of that, so in the context of that, is that you don't get to say much. You don't get to do much. And that is, for me, you know, if I just apply Socratic method to that, the question that I ask is, can it lead to this outcome? And I've seen that outcome. And therefore, something is wrong. Something is wrong if this is how it leads. So when I say there's a mission creep, function creep, I'm actually being sort of kind.
Explain mission creep, function creep.
Yeah, see, any concept that you launch into the world, right, could be anything. right, has a parameter, has a boundary, well, not a problem, but a boundary concern, right? And this is what we need to accomplish, right? And that's how, if you're judging whether a concept has some utility, the first question you'll ask is to a person, sir, aapko chahiye kya? What do you want from all of this? And then you will ask them in a staggered manner, what is, you know, what do you see temporally, chronologically playing out? And if it doesn't play out, what is strategy A, strategy B? But how do we get to this point? Please explain all of this. So mission creep is firstly, the one assumption in mission creep is that there is that boundary. Right? And that's why I say I'm probably being charitable. Because if you listen to what you and I listen to, although I also listen to a lot of stuff, that, I don't know if you don't listen to, but a lot of people of my disposition would not listen to, contrarian points of views. But the first thing that you will ask is, what is the boundary? Now, you will not get an answer to that, right? Because that itself might be, whatever, oppressive to ask. Why are you asking out of turn? Why are you even asking these questions? Are you questioning the entire methodology? Are you questioning the entire process? So those questions cannot be asked. So when I'm being charitable, what I mean is, what mission creep means is that you extend it beyond that boundary, you know? So let's take a very blasé example. Let's take data protection law in India, right? Highly contested, left, right, so on and so forth. Ek bol raha hai right to freedom of speech and expression, privacy. Dusra bol raha hai, regulation to chahiye. In fact, both people want regulation, but they want it in different manner. They have different aims. Now the problem becomes is when people start looking at whatever these intermediary rules are or whatever it is from both sides, you know, in a highly reductive manner and go beyond that boundary concern, right? What is the concern? What are you looking to regulate with social media, right? You're looking to regulate something in social media's case, that's actually not an easy example because it's sort of fluid. It's tied to technology. It's tied to many things. But the idea is, are you looking to shut down people? So from the left, you could say that there is a function creep, that there is a mission creep, in as much as we know the larger context in which these laws are being passed. And we know the immediate context, which was whatever Sambit Patra said this, and it was manipulated media. And so we can derive the function creep, mission creep from it. We are thinking that it's actually going beyond this. The trigger for this has been XYZ, which is not related to the mission objectives of this particular law. But that's actually not true, because the right would respond and say, well, these were actually notified 3 months ago and they were actually supposed to be notified on this very date. And therefore, it's just a matter of, like, you know, one of the serendipitous just coincidence.
Right.
And so how do you see? So in that context, there's a mission creep. I feel that on the left sometimes, especially because the left sort of abhors whatever the left is, man. You know, I'm a lefty, but whatever this kind of left is, I call it social media left because that's where I see it. I don't see it anywhere else. Maybe in universities, but I don't go to them anymore. The idea that basically, when I am saying that there is a mission creep on the left, I am saying that there is a utility and that utility runs out after a point. There's a shelf life, there's an expiration date, temporally speaking, and even conceptually speaking, so both things. And you have outrun that. And I think what you have tacked on to that, why you have outrun it, again, because the left hates it. I think that's why they don't admit it. But a lot of it is status, right? And I've had a lot of personal conversations with a lot of people. And it is status. They all admit it. You know. And what do you mean by status? These are status games in the sense that it's... Uski status ke niche mujhe lagta hai aata hai virtue signaling is one tool of status appreciation going up the ladder. Generally, I mean, they reject the idea of status. And, you know, we've gone on about this, but I don't think those are problems in India. That's not what I think.
Right.
I mean, again, because, I mean... applying the very same principles of this discussion of right. context, of not making the context or me fallacy, which is, you know, let's not, we have to marinate everything in context.
Right.
And we can't just, you know, think of it outside of that.
No, I'll tell you what, I share your experience, right? I think, and this is sort of, my team keeps telling me, hey, every time you bring a guest on, for the sake of the audience, at least, tell them why you're bringing the guest on. And I think there could be nothing more insulting than introducing my guest on my own show. They're there, that's it. You want to listen to it or no? Right? Like, they're there because I find them valuable. But with you, I'm almost drawn to the place where I must give that context. Part of the reason why you're here, apart from all the other things that you've done in your life and so on, is I find you very interesting. And I think after the conversation yesterday, I also find that there's a lot of an overlap in terms of our experiences as well. And maybe the thin sliver of overlap has to do with you going to America. But before I get on with that, I would also like to say your opinions, I very readily absorb. It's not as much as in agreement or in disagreement as much as in admiration, because I think you have a very sharp eye for nuance. And like my bet, having known you for less than 24 hours, verbally as such, is that you'll make a great lawyer. Because you're extremely like, I have a lawyer family. Everybody in my family is a lawyer. They've looked at me all my life and told me I'd be a great lawyer. And I know. Right. And then so I know what those skills are because I never use them. So I can notice those skills. I can notice the skills in you, and you're fantastic, man. You're even like, if my family saw you, they'd probably stop saying I'd be a great lawyer. But let me go back to what I was saying. So when I went to America, I had two very similar experiences to the one you're talking about. The first one was in a class on Hinduism, and I was the only second. There were just two people in that class who were brown, right? Me and my roommate. And apart from us, there were only two other people who had Hindi names. So there was this one girl who was, what's that thing? Prabhupada's thing? ISKCON. She was ISKCON, essentially. And
her
professor,
name was ISKCON?
No. Her family was ISKCON. Oh, great. She was Russian or something, but her family was ISKCON, so she had an Indian name. And then there was the professor who also spoke Hindi. Right? And the professor's white dude, 80 plus, 70 plus, like pretty old, but he spoke Hindi. Like he'd hang out in Mathura all the time, he'd tell me. Mathura Vrindavan, because he was a Krishna scholar, right? And he'd speak in that language, bro. Like you and I would relate UP backgrounds, right? Like he would speak in that
language.
It was amazing, right? And I sat through the entire semester, freshly off the boat. I was just 2017. I just landed there. And I was presenting my final paper that semester. I was reading out my interpretations on the Bhagavad Gita. And every time I'd refer to the disciple in that conversation, I'd use the word he. Well, I grew up in a CBSE education system. The world's not broad enough for me yet.
Yeah.
And then somebody who was a graduate student, probably 7-8 years older than I was, stood up, made everybody wait, pointed at the fact that I said he. She says, you should use a gender neutral pronoun. And then everybody in the class clapped. And
did they clap like this?
No. Bro, that would have been the end of it. I would have walked out because in my head, I'm just like, I'm appalled. I remember that day. That did not even push me back that badly. I was just like appalled. I was like, what kind of clownage is this? Like, I understand your need to be correct, but where the fuck is the context? Don't you recognize? You've known me all semester. Don't you recognize I've been too short a time around here to understand what rules you play these games by? Like, how do you expect me to know this stuff? And then for everybody to celebrate as if this is some kind of a moral victory achieved over some kind, like, you know, what could be attributed to stupidity must not be attributed to malice kind of a thing. There was one was this. The other was Antifa. These guys were just playing music on the quad, bro. I was like, ye to cool hai. Ye music play kar rahe. Antifa, naam se bhi anti-fascist lagte hai. Koi dikkat nahi hai. So me and my friend started hanging out with them, you know. The other guys apparently knew. I did not know like what a militant form these guys can take in a second and how like they'd harangue you. If they find out your address, they'd harangue you.
It's a mob.
It's a mob. To be very honest. It's a mob. And it's like, I don't know what Antifa is all about, but that was a wild time. And slowly, I think this is almost anybody with left-leaning sensibilities who goes to America for the first time understands what a circus left politics in America is. And finds...
Has become.
Yeah, has become. For sure, of course.
In the hands of the agents of this party.
Right.
That's very important.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
To your example, right? I mean, in the sense that I think that there are always custodians of this information and they keep shuffling. Temporarily, they shuffle, obviously, and those are easier to parse out, right? Martin Luther se leke aaj tak, jisko bhi le lo, yaar. John Milton se le lo, agar actually classical liberalism le lo. There'll be custodians of this tribe,
camp, right?
And they'll develop it. I feel that the custodians today and their interpretations of it are again. I don't know if it's malice. I don't know if it's stupidity.
No,
but I do feel
it
in the hands of
malice.
These people.
I wouldn't say malice. I'd say stupidity, man. And maybe you know, like people who have admired listening to politically have often attributed it to malice. I'm a little more conservative. I'd like to find it out for myself. You know how we were discussing this idea of politics becoming a cesspool of facts? It's probably the first time historically we've been in a position to say a phrase like that. A cesspool of facts. The fact that there are so many facts and information that the signal's drowned. It's only noise at some point. And so before I admit to the fact that there is evil people sitting on any side of the political sphere, I'd like to sit down and have tea with them. And what happens from there, though, is I had a grand disillusionment about left politics. And I automatically, being young enough, gravitated towards right politics. Also because I was listening to, say, Jordan Peterson and whatnot. And it's not like they're right-leaning people themselves, but they do open a door for you to, you know, walk through it.
Yeah, and it's quite interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's in the implicit, not in the explicit with Peterson. Yeah. So like he has to admit to that. It's not what he's saying that's right-leaning. It's
he has to admit to it.
Yes, he has admit to it.
Yeah, that's one of his things.
I love the guy.
I love the guy.
You have to admit to it, right?
I mean, like, I love the guy to the extent that I love Maps of Meaning.
For sure.
I love a lot of his lectures. And there's stuff that you and I both understand. You know, see, the right is also playing status. Everybody's playing status. This podcast, not you, but me, being here, I know that at least a part of it is going public and we're discussing this. You know, yeah.
Bro, this is going to help your status so much. I don't know what you would do with that.
Jeet gaya main, jeet gaya. But in the sense that I don't know, yaar. I think the even a finer principle underneath all of that. Sorry, I've cut you off, but I'm just going to finish.
No, please. Huh? I'm liking it.
Even like, you know, you can go a level below that. So when you go to status inquiry, which sounds like a very bank teller, sort of call center thing.
Right.
But I think everybody is motivated by largely the same thing. And we have largely the same struggles in the sense before everybody jumps on me and says things about privilege, because I completely acknowledge that. And I'm not being whatever.
See, bro, here's the thing.
Okay?
I'll tell you something. Because you don't care about being an ally. You don't care about being labeled an ally.
Absolutely.
Let us stop with this circular language that the left coerces us to use, where we have to almost always be hedging and saying, no, wait, I believe in this, but I'm just saying, right? Like, let's not anchor and adjust as well. Just anchor and move forward, right? Huh?
Get it. So
I'll just apologize in advance for everything, all the hard digression.
Right? Right. And in fact, fuck the digression. Huh. This is going to come back to what I'm saying.
Right.
Right. The point is that why I make these hedges is because these hedges are intrinsic to what I am trying to say. So I'd like to believe, right? So I'd like to believe. And you'll hear from me as to why that might not be the case.
Right.
Right. On that level of analysis, I feel that, yes, there is a thing called privilege. Yes, I'm a big benefactor of it, right? What level should that extend to? Can we not have this dialogue? Should we be aware of the implications of the dialogue? Of course we should. We should, as we should be aware of implications of anything that we do in life, right? What I disagree with is the extent of the implications of that dialogue. And I think that's a gray area because when it comes to speech, I am personally subscribed to the idea of the liberal classical notion of speech, which is that speech in most cases is not violence, right? And then there are all sorts of tests and principles in various jurisdictions. And yes, we can contest those tests in places. But one thing I cannot agree with is that just by virtue of my identity, I cannot put out my point of view.
That makes no sense. It's almost, you know, the word you use, cannibalistic. It eventually, I don't see how, if you keep playing this game of producing identity spontaneously for the sake of your argument, because, you know, you might be a cishet, whatever, but you're also, say, for instance, I'm just using an example. Say you're also socially underprivileged. I don't know, you know, or you're also very well read. Like there is all these terms that go into these identity situations that are not evident all the time. And as far as privilege is concerned, anybody who's truly honest to themselves can admit to the fact that privilege is a deal. Especially in the country that we live, privilege is a deal. And I say, maybe, you know, caste is more intangible. Look at economics. The steep curve of how economics plays out in this country is no joke. There is privilege. It's the political implications of it. And for that matter, even the omissions in politics because of privilege. On both sides, having privilege and thus being able to say whatever you want, and having privilege and thus not being able to say whatever you want. They're both unsound for now to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think also, where I'll make a distinction is caste is not really intangible. I mean, we can see the effect of it. Thing is that both of everyone likes to, again, because that binary or that strong bimodality exists, I think people like to talk in terms of, reservations mein aapne dekh liya kaise creepy layer mein the next person is also able to avail of it. And, you know, and that's, I mean, as a standalone argument, you're like, yeah, of course, I can see that. But you would also cut it against the idea of reservations, which is social equality and not just income inequality. Because as long as, and the left will say, well, as long as matrimonial ads don't vanish with a caste reference, how is it that you can say caste has vanished? Which I think is actually a poor example. Because you can make much better, you can steel man the argument for caste discrimination in this country, if there is even a requirement to do that, in much better ways. So I think caste and class play a big factor, right? I am only on the point, and strictly on the point of who can speak, who cannot, and whether privilege as a notion and the obfuscation of intention can be used to parameterize who gets to speak, who doesn't get to speak. Kisko quarter, jaise army mein army ka background ka, to quarter guard situation hoti sare army wale. Jisne zyada bakwas ki army usko quarter guard mein dal dete hain. To usne koi rule ka ulanghan kiya, and that's almost like solitary confinement, right? Actually, it's likely worse because there's no process appended to it. You don't see yourself going there. You're just gone, right? And I think that's what's happened. And again, to go back, you know, I get the reservations against due process because, as you were discussing, the way due process is played out in this country, again,
process
the custodians,
is the punishment, dude. Process is the punishment.
Exactly. Right. The custodians of due process, just like the custodians of left ideology, have failed us.
Yes.
You know, and while I can say that emphatically for the custodians of due process, which, again, this is my own profession, right, law, this is the executive, right? They have failed us by and large. If you were to look through the left and the right, my baap culture, everything exists in India. But when I make that claim for the left, I am treated to this recursive argument, right?
That you can't make
this claim.
Because you're privileged.
Then I'm just like, okay, so where do I venture that observation?
No, I'm actually asking. Manu, I refuse to admit where do I venture this observation as a sentence. So, ulta bolna, fir baat na karein kya? Like, my point is, when you code it like that in language so soft, where do I venture my observation? It's like,
yeah,
no, break that illusion for them. Beyond all of this linguistic coding of who we have become when we politically code ourselves with words like privilege, and there is a person sitting across from me, although digitally, trying to talk to me about something, and so am I, right? So let's cut the crap. Let's cut all these layers of interpretation we've added on top and try and talk to each other as humans so we can both walk out of this room happier. You know, what is this? Like, you know, it's, you were saying humanitarian languages, language cuts across everything for you to be able to communicate to people yesterday. If I remember this correctly, I picked it up. Right? And that's what I mean. Like, probably the need of that minute is to be like, shut up. Let's talk like people. I don't know. I haven't ran that experiment myself.
I agree with you, but I think the level that, because we are going further down the pyramid, and right, and the beginning of this segue was that we were going to get to that level of analysis.
Right.
You know, what is it that we are trying to achieve as individuals in all of this, right? Matlab, actually, what stops me? Why don't I just withdraw? If people are saying that I have so much privilege and I'm believing that I have privilege, then why are you studying these things, man? मैं निकल जाता हूँ ना, मैं कनाडा की सिटीजनशिप ले लेता हूँ अक्षय कुमार की तरह, फिर वापस आऊंगा 10 साल बाद, एंड आई विल मेक सम क्लेम व्हाटएवर आइदर साइड ऑफ इट. सो व्हाई एम आई गेटिंग इनटू इट? सो दैट इज अ डिफरेंट लेवल ऑफ एनालिसिस, दैट इज एन ट्रू एनालिसिस ऑफ माय इंटेंशन, वी कैन गेट टू दैट. बट आई थिंक एट द रियल पॉलिटिक लेवल, द रीजन आई काउच माय यू नो सॉफ्ट लैंग्वेज एटसेट्रा इज ओनली बिकॉज आई स्टिल हैव होप दैट आई कैन रीच आउट, यू नो, इन द सेंस दैट not be an ally, reach out as an individual. I mean, I'd love to be an ally, whatever. Love to nahi, matlab in the sense, koi bana raha hai to bana de. But I have my reservations because once you're an ally, you're part of a group. And maybe that's, now people say that's a function of privilege. And it's so bloody recursive that you can't escape that,
bro. It's original sin. Peterson is right about it. It's original sin.
Yeah, we can keep getting into that.
Yeah, unless you drop your last name.
As a matter of intellectual inquiry. And that's what I feel. I feel that the correct way of deploying my privilege, irrespective of what 3,000 people others have to say, I don't even care about other people's privilege. I'm talking about my own privilege, right? Where I've grown up, what I've grown up to do, what my parents have created for me, what is the intersection of caste, class, whatever they've worked on. I feel that, okay, I'm in a position where if I want to speak individually and I want to speak my truth and develop my truth and, you know, resurface my truth revisit my truth in certain ways, then I have to reach across and ask people, ki kya hai boss? Matlab, what is going on? So how should I speak? I find personally, from what I've seen, from what we've discussed, that I'm better off not asking that question. And that is a red flag. Right? Because I'm like, main kyun poochunga?
Mereko phasna kyun hai? Main kyun phasunga?
Kyunki jaise main poochunga, I will have a bunch of auditors and a bunch of wardens
right.
who are looking over my head. Mujhse poocha. You know, like, not my partner, but a lot of the people now that I've come into contact with, I see them. And kisi ne koi post lagaya, to kisi ne 10 comment kar diya. And some big influencer who only talks about this stuff has suddenly taken up as cause belai, you know, cause for war. And I said, don't engage. Like, the best thing you can do is, if you can learn from our prime minister, stay under the wave. You know, I'm sorry.
If there is one thing you can learn from him. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Just stay quiet for a while. It will pass. What you're doing with that is not just simply a function of, are people will forget. No. What you're also doing is, by engaging with that person,
you're validating it.
You're creating a currency. Creating a currency, you know, a two-way exchange. And then that person will take your currency, distribute to 5 other people who will deploy it against you. And this is with the custodians of left intellectualism. Personally, I don't find why people are so aggressive against the writing itself. I think intersectionality is a great concept. I think privilege is a great concept. I think whatever Derrida onwards has come downwards, jitna maine padha hai, Heidegger se shuru kar lo, chalo Derrida se nahi karna, toh, very linguistic se kata. Aur maine zyada nahi padha, I'm not an avid reader. I hope we'll come to that point at some point.
Hopefully, if we can get past all this political bullshit,
You know, buddy, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
The one thing I was like, iska podcast karenge, left ke baare mein itna bashing nahi karenge. That's why I'm going.
Lekin wo nikalega.
That's why I'm trying to parse it.
Right.
And so again, this is a great point. Keep this in mind, because I'll finish with this also on this particular point. Is that I think the custodians of this political paradigm have. Are wrongly deploying it, is my personal opinion. We can disagree, we can have a discussion about it. My fear is, the minute we have the discussion, it is such a closed circuit of thinking that I will be trapped in the very thing that I'm trying to criticize, and my very criticism will be rendered null and void by the object of my criticism. It's going to just come back at
me. Yes.
And so I feel that I maintain a distance. This is the first time I'm talking about it in these stark terms.
Right.
God bloody knows what's going to come out of it.
But to finish my point earlier about the whole story, right? When I came back to India, I almost expected, unconsciously, the left politics here to be as caricatured and silly and stupid as it tends to be on campuses like Columbia and Berkeley. And Berkeley being probably a more...
the fountainhead. Emphatic,
yes, like probably the fountainhead of the whole thing. Columbia is much the same on the eastern side of the country, but it's like, it's insane, right? And so I did not take it very seriously. And then eventually I came across, you know, more and more understanding of the Indian landscape. The first thing I realized was the Indian left politics is neither in need, nor in shape, nor in form, anything like the American left politics.
Yes.
And within the Indian left politics, there is a very strong division, which maybe I see right now. Maybe, you know, somebody who's more versed may be able to see it better. But that's the division between what I think is the real, or what should be the real need of left politics, and what it becomes in sort of this urban, linguistically clad, American-influenced, you know, left-leaning. Like the stuff that you'd see on Clubhouse generally. Stuff that you won't see on like MX Takatak. Or Instagram, right? You won't see on like massy platforms. You'll see that where people are, they're throwing in words that they've not even read anywhere else except like a Twitter tweet or some shit like that. You know, and wo jo left-leaning politics hai, that's trying to serve a very different kind of a India. That's trying to serve your South Delhi, South Mumbai, South Kolkata idea of freedom of speech, etc. That's like, it's slightly different. It's almost like economic privilege taking this virtuous moral high horse, you know, and I'm not saying it's all bad intent, but I'm just saying it's different. Maybe I'm wrong in my interpretation of that.
I mean, it's a strange thing, because in any person who views politics in any serious manner who's able to communicate on social media in such a manner, in such an emphatic manner, in such a precise and direct manner, surely is capable of meta-analysis. Surely. I mean, surely that is a prerequisite of it all. And therefore, one should be very aware of what really is your calling as a left-leaning individual.
The point being that to go beyond that level of analysis, just underneath whatever, you know, this whole thing of right, left, etc. I find that theek hai yaar, matlab mujhe interfere nahi karna, but I know what you're doing, right? Mm. You are appealing to your circle of people. You are appealing to an issue which is obviously an issue with your circle of people. But let's acknowledge that, right? At some level, I don't expect, you know, people, a lot of people ask, everything is a status play. And I'm saying, yeah, but like, what isn't at the end of the day?
Let me see if I understand like the grand point that you're trying to make, and forgive me if I butcher it in any way, but it seems like that beyond actually feeling for an issue, eventually these criticisms, these complaints on either side of the political spectrum end up becoming status objects, status currencies that we exchange with people who already agree with us in a way, so that, you know, we feel better about ourselves in the long run instead of actually dealing with the issue. Like I often say, say hypothetically I am left, right, and you are right, and say you and I were to ever meet to discuss, hey, how do we bridge our gaps and how do we make sense of the nation for the two of us, right? I'd tell you, go clean your shit, you know, discard everybody who you think is far and beyond and above and, you know, beyond, like who's a radical, say whatever, and I'd clean my house instead of me cleaning your house and you trying to clean my house, because we'll never get done. You'll always pick the lowest hanging fruit and complain about how my party is not doing it properly, and I'll do the same for you. Might as well do our own jobs, like might as well clean our own hedges so we can come and talk to each other. People who are genuinely interested in solving a problem are drowning, are being drowned because, well, our point of views are not very interesting. They're not eyeball catching. They're not the kind of views that elicit emotional response for which social media is coded. So in a way, I feel like, you know, if Chomsky was still, I don't know how active he's still about.
He's still alive.
I know he's alive. Active, man. It's I have crazy. Two of my friends recently interviewed him. So I know
he did the Z, and I say Z because everybody's saying Z now. This is the Jaipur Lit Fest. And he was with the... 5 months ago, he was with that NDTV fellow, Srinivas.
Oh, I see. He came all the way to India, huh?
No.
Oh, it was online. Video. Oh, yeah. Right.
But he just looked like...
Oh, he's old, man. He's old. Two of my friends recently got in a conversation with him about Israel and race, both of those being experts on the subject. And so I know he's alive, but I don't know if he's talking about manufactured consent in this age. Because, you know, I've been trying to develop that casually. Not that it has any academic rigor to it, but there is... there is this kind of a diluted unfreedom is what I call that idea. And the etymology of it, we can work out later. But the idea is that we don't even recognize we are being presented with choices per se, but they're not really choices. Those choices are handpicked for my emotional reaction. And so people who create those choices for me, people who create emotionally charged choices for me on social media get incentivized. And eventually what we have is radicals shitting on moderates instead of moderates telling the radicals to get the fuck out of the house so we can talk and solve this. And so, like, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe this is just around the time I'm coming of age and realizing that politics is such a standstill. It's such a landlock. It's such a logjam. The word's probably logjam. But, like, it seems like issues don't get solved because people don't even agree on fundamental facts or values. You know,
yeah.
And I feel like the distance is only growing.
Degree of facts is the problem, you
right?
Know? And there's something wrong if you've placed one thing. You know, it's one of those. Yeah, I mean, I'm in complete agreement with what you're saying. I don't want to interrupt your thought, but if you have something to add, because I you reminded me of what I was speaking about.
No, go on, please.
So the idea there was basically discussing what is the how much should people like us, these smaller concentric circles of left liberalism or whatever you want to call it, do they have value, right? Does the South Delhi, South Bombay crowd discussing it with each other have value? I think it does have value. I think it's teaching each other something. It's they're negotiating with each other. And that's great. Let them do it. That's what I feel. I feel that, okay, they're doing it. I'm not a participant in it. I don't even understand the ABCs of it. I mean, frankly, actually, if you ask me, I think I have a fair understanding of what's happening. But
they won't let you believe that for a second.
That's okay. See, that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
And so, therefore, that is more privilege than appropriate. Right. Like, that's great. Huh. It works ironically, but it works.
We live in a post-ironical time, bro.
Yeah,
where we're talking about shoot your shot now.
Post-irony.
Post-irony. It's post-irony.
Right? But I just, see, the sum and substance of it is this, right? If I was to, because I want to move beyond left politics, the exact thing that I didn't want to talk
I
about.
Know,
but
I found you right.
I knew I would talk to you about this, Prakar. I just,
let's see, Freud would be proud. Freud would be proud. It's like what you repress expresses.
Bhai, abhi toh bahut log bolne wale hain. But what I feel is this, right? I have an oppositional character. I told you this yesterday also. Yes. I'm a contrarian and I'm very comfortable in that contrariness. I'm a, what I like is, I like Kurt Vonnegut's analogy of how you should look at life, which is expanded circles of trust. So if there's my partner, if there's my parents, if there's someone working for me, I feel that it is my duty to them to practice whatever, compassion, kindness, all the virtues that the left upholds and really throws in your face as banner politics, you know, on a flex. And I feel that's where I practice. When I get beyond that, when I get to public discourse, maybe I'm speaking from the 80s, 70s, whatever, the sort of polemic that went on, sort of polemic that influenced me. I feel that we really need to firstly agree on what is the level that we are talking, right? Is it real politic, right? Is it, so that's where this band of conversation happens and, you know, on news media, television media, sometimes on your podcast, you know, so there's that band of politics. And then there is a more personal sort of politics that we can discuss, right? You know, where do I stand? Because that upper band of politics is purely and purely performative, right? It is completely performative. And as you graduate further down that scale, I think you're approaching more of a personal nature of politics, right? Mm-hmm. You're talking about more, like, what is my place in this discussion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, if it is to do with whatever, do influencers do this? Are they more left-leaning, right-leaning? What is the nature of whatever the discussion that we're having in India, which might have larger implications outside, but I feel that there are more pressing problems in India to discuss at the real politics level.
Right.
And I find that, okay, ab ye discussion yahan chal raha hai, theek hai, ye ek discussion hai. Now, what I have a problem with is people picking from that upper level, going down to the lower level, picking out some absurd example, right? At the same time, people at that lower level are completely fine because of the way social media works to go like, yeah, we are actually part of the same band.
Right.
You know, and that's what I feel is the status play, which actually obfuscates more than creates some value.
Right.
And then, okay. So we'll also enter this foray because there's more people talking about it. There are larger characters at play. There are the more, you know, bahut famous log iski baat kar rahe. And I find that completely ridiculous. So when somebody takes low-hanging fruit from either side, you know, somebody takes a, and, you know, I do this all the time, to be very honest. I did it with Ramdev, right? And I'm still struggling with it, you know.
I'm still struggling with Ramdev. Like,
I am still struggling with how I have chosen to depict Ramdev, not with Ramdev himself. To me, he's a non-character. Like, he should be an NPC.
Right.
You know, but that's never going to be the case. But the thing is that when we discuss someone like Ramdev and I take him and I say, oh, look, here is right-wing politics. This is what it is. It is not some right-wing intellectual who's able to perform those or who's able to present those ideas in a better way. This is what it is. The reason I do it actually is because I feel that that character has already been appropriated by the right to make a point, right? And that character has willingly presented himself as mainstream politics. And I feel that mainstream politics is weaponizing what he's talking about. So that shift from level B to level A is already being made.
Right.
That's how I justify it in my head. Now I'm still struggling with that.
Right.
But my problem is just that. You know, my problem is that people take woke politics and they say, "Arey, look at what they discuss here. They discuss gender fluidity in a country like India.
Yeah,
they're talking about privilege in a country like India. They're talking about influencer culture in India. Who are these people? Who are these people to discuss X, Y, and Z, you know? And therefore, you present a caricature and it becomes a caricature the minute it transcends that level. That is what I have a problem with. And I'm struggling with it, to be very honest.
Like, but I think you're complicating it too much. Like, you know, like I may be super wrong, but it just sounds like it. To those layers of analysis going into just Ramdev. Like, Ramdev for me is an NPC who I still need to analyze just so that I can make a point to whoever's listening to me to understand how what science and literacy can look like and do to a country and then move past that. Like, if I start taking guilt about the fact that I'm attacking a low-hanging fruit and then making a larger point, like, you know, we could get into that chain. I think it's why most people do the most reasonable thing, which is the most efficient thing. It is only when you are limiting yourself to shooting your shots at Ramdev to make a point about right-wing politics.
Tu clubhouse pe hai, mujhe pata hai.
Bro, maine shooting your shot kar bhi liya. But you know, I heard you first. Let me finish that point and I want to come to something lighter because we've discussed heavy shit all this while. I want to give you your due. So, like, it's only when we are attacking the caricature and then, you know, trying to make a larger point throughout that we must hold ourselves accountable more often and think about what the implication of that is, especially people with you, like you and I, who have some amount of like followership for opinion, which is, by the way, probably one of the biggest privileges you can understand or imagine, like having followership for opinion. Anyway.
Mera to pura mere partner se aata. Usko bhi ja sakta. Maine bahut openly bola hai ki main mere to aadhe log hi sunte hain ki main apne kuch matlab aisa bol do. Unko lagta hai politics kahan se baat kar raha hai. That's why my rate of regression is very high in followers, you know.
Right. They follow you because they're like, "Acha, hame pata lagega what is the backdrop of Dolly's life." But they find out, yeah, the backdrop of
kya baatein kar raha hai,
country's life. Oh my god.
Yeah, like but, एक दिन तो इसने ऐसा पोस्ट शेयर किया, दूसरे दिन ये बात कर रहा है ऐसे पॉलिटिक्स की, ऐसे चार चार पेज लिख रहा है. I'm saying, मैं क्या करूँ,
this is very adaptive. Yeah, but yes, like, bro, I did go on Clubhouse after, you know, I saw you, we'd had this small interaction on Instagram about Clubhouse. You told me about Shoot Your Shot and I could not believe it. I was like, this is some, like, he's probably, like, you know, you can be cryptic. I was like, probably he's trying to, some metaphorical, some bullshit. Like, you know, he's not being literal about it. And then I asked you, is this literally true? Is this ironical or what is happening? And you were like, this is probably post-ironical or some shit. And I was like, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Then one day, I've been on Clubhouse for a while. I ended up logging onto it. And I ended up in a room called Shoot Your Shot with the sexiest people on CH, by the way.
You did not end up. You chose to be in that room.
Yeah. I chose to be in that room. And then I sat there for 4 hours. I invited all my friends to watch with me because I could not believe what was happening. Like, I had my friends at 3 a.m. logging onto that room. And then I was live tweeting about it throughout. I was like, this is fucking crazy.
Crazy, no?
Like, forget politics for a second. This is monkeys instantiating a ritual that makes no bloody sense to eventually do what all monkeys like to do. Fuck. Right? And I could not stop. I was like, this is, bro, fantastic. So I wanted to text you then. Then I ended up on that one other day. And that day, I did shoot my shot. I was like, might as well give it a shot. You know, if every monkey is dancing, I'm going to try and see what dancing looks like. It's so underwhelming. It's so underwhelming. Like, it takes the whole charm out of courtship away. You know, like, there is supposed to be that push and pull, that dance between me and her, right? If it's going to be as easy as copying a line out of Google and saying it with my voice, please, why are you doing this, right? But, dude,
that's like, very interesting.
Huh,
that's
what?
Very interesting.
What?
I mean, for a person who's been saying, let's not overcomplicate it,
huh,
in a way, what you're saying right now is, I like the complication. I like
sex,
the build-up.
With sex and love, I think it's super straight. You need to see each other in the eye. That's the simplification. Everything else is a dance you do on top. You have to negotiate such an intricacy. But it's all about, like, if you don't know me, like, you know, how can we pretend like anything at all? And I mean that more generally, even for Tinder and Bumble. I never use Tinder and Bumble. Because I'm like, all you're going to see is pictures of me trying to flaunt myself. Now, I should be an object. I should objectify my own self for some random stranger's pleasure to swipe right on me and never text me back. That's bullshit.
Right?
I might as well have... And so, you make an interesting point. I'm now feeling dissonant. But it's like, I would rather take that excitement and nervousness of meeting somebody in the wild. That part of the life.
So, I mean... Yeah. It's not a dissonant point, right? Yeah. It speaks to that, right?
Right.
Whatever, we cannot even pretend to get to the bottom of what this is.
Right.
What is this constitution? What works? Some people go for religion, some people go for politics, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the worst. Politics.
Right.
Because you're extrapolating outwards. At least religion has that notion, as absurd as its conclusions might be, it goes in.
Yeah, right.
But politics is kind of a strange era. I feel that complexity has its place, right? And I think in these matters, the matters that you speak of, and let me put out a full disclosure warning here. I met my partner through
Clubhouse.
Through an app, yeah.
Oh, and through an app.
No, not Clubhouse.
Oh, okay. That was like, you shot your shot, you're not telling me, bro.
That would be bad, man.
Yeah.
That would be the worst.
No, you met her on an app.
I met her on an app, yeah. And to be honest, I was doing the same thing as you were, but I was not looking for that. I was like, theek hai yaar, this is what we're doing. Bhai Vijay Raaz jaisa lagta hai, koi baat, dal do. And then it worked out, and you know, and then one thing to the other. So that full disclosure is there. But I understand what you're saying.
No, I'm not against apps. I'm not against apps. I'm against.
I know you are.
That
I don't think you're against anything per se.
Yeah,
that's the point that we're getting at. Right. You know?
I'm against the larger point.
Exactly. The larger point to close down this left-right ghost that's now hanging above and behind us.
Open your closet. There's some skeletons in there, my friend. Like that's. Right.
But the point is that, you know, to get beyond all of this, the simple point is that, look here, everything has a boundary, right? And we bring these concepts to life to deal with certain issues. And I understand privilege. I understand intersectionality. And I'm a fallibilist, which means basically that I'm not a skeptic, although some fallibilists like to believe that that's what they equate fallibilism with skepticism. I'm not fully a skeptic, and I got
into fallibilism. Explain fallibilist, just so that I have a piece.
Fallibilist is the notion, it's almost fatalism, but in a weird ironic sense. It means that, look, we all know at the end of the day, the notion turtles all the way down. You know, we are not going, if we keep asking questions as to what is the essential nugget of truth, what is the unassailable fact on the basis of which everything is being propounded or towards which everything is moving, arguing from a position or to a position, as we were discussing yesterday, you both are elusive.
Right.
You will never find them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Eventually, you will get like loopy or some shit. Yeah.
So investigating any argument, you will get to a point where you will not be able to justify.
The bedrock is values. What do you value more, right? And those values comes from belief. Like that is probably as far as I've gotten.
Is what all fallibilists are up in arms about. In fact, I think I find fallibilism to be a very humne invent kiya, but hamesha se raha hai type of term. Because this is. I mean, main bahut chota bhi tha, tab bhi mujhe lagta tha ki yaar, why don't I believe in my family was very religious and mujhe to believe nahi hota, and I used to not ask them in the sense that you would picture it in a movie, you know, why, you know, that Louis C.K. thing,
right.
why, but not like that. But generally I had the notion that, well, all of this is clearly a construct,
right?
It's constructed upon something and nobody will be able to give me the foundation for this if we get to it. So that's what fallibilism is, but there are obviously many schools or many departments or many different militant organizations which, you know, talk to these points about, well, is it because it's status? Is it because we ascribe intrinsic value? Are you just basically a skeptic trying to reinvent skepticism? You know, an atheist shifting to an agnost, you know, that sort of argument. So what is it? So, but I'm a fallibilist in a generic sense, you know, that I don't have the mentality for being a complete skeptic. Say that fellow who appears on Joe Rogan, I forget.
Shermer.
The editor of Shermer.
Shermer, yeah. So I met Shermer,
Wo mujhe irritate karta.
Bhai, wo bahut zyada skeptic hai yaar tu. Thoda to maan kisi cheez mein.
I have a theory. And this goes back to the issue, right? Again, we've digressed. I was going to summarize the ghost.
Summarize that and then come to Shermer, and I have another interesting question.
I was going to bury the ghost.
Right.
But that's not it. Ghosts are not meant to be buried anymore.
For sure.
But there's something about Sherman's personality that I don't like, to be very honest with you. It's got nothing to do with what he's saying.
Right.
You know, if it's, for instance, it's happened to me with Eric Weinstein. I don't know why.
You don't like Eric Weinstein?
You know, let me tell you something. No, I'm not going to make that claim. I really appreciate Eric Weinstein. But there is this recent, since I started following him on Twitter, there is this recent manner in which he's talking. And I feel that he's changed. I think something has overwhelmed him and he has lost his objectivity, which happens to a lot of us when we reach the public sphere in the manner that we do.
Right.
And I think now he's become a soldier. You know, he used to be a sort of a lecturer or a preacher sitting outside telling us
right.
that, you know, boss, these are the nuances essentially boiled down.
Society, yeah.
We must take care of and, you know, I'm on the left, blah, blah, blah. I think he's become a soldier in a fight, which sometimes happens because it's not our war.
Right.
But I'm sure he's been thrown into a war because of that whole New York Times article about the intellectual dark web, Yevo, right. Vagera.
Yeah.
I think that happens to a lot of us. In fact, that happens to a lot of social media people also.
Hmm.
You know, these influencers or whoever these people are, ki wo log ek jagah se shuru karte hain and then they end up in another.
Hmm.
I have felt it myself, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When I started off, I used to write very freely about stuff, you know, don't like wokeism, not a subscriber, a distant fallibilist believer that there is some value to this, but I don't believe in the absolutist nature in which you're presenting it.
Yeah, right.
Of course, it presents the same problem that we were discussing.
Right.
And on the right, you know, some people, so those posts would be shared by people on the right, whatever, and go like, are, you know, Manu made fun of whoever my small following is.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd be like, at pains to go like, well, buddy, you know what, this is not to discount in this specific context, in the country that I live in, I am not subscribing to what you're believing. So here's the thing, right? Here's how I see it. After all the discussion that we had, I feel that I have left-leaning sensibilities. And whatever, if there was no left, if there was none of this, it was just discourse and discourse alone, undivided discourse, then these would be my ideas. I would lean on the side of the right to information. I would lean on the side of, you know, accountability for institutions. I would lean on the side in a country like India for a social welfare net at the bottom. Maybe it'd be the NREGA or whatever. I would lean on the side of cautious disinvestment and not disinvestment
recklessly
in the harried way.
Mm.
And I would most importantly lean on the side of transparency.
Mm.
Right? And this has been true for the Congress because I don't believe them to be
good people.
Left right. or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I see them as a kleptocratic, opportunistic institution.
Right.
That is
kleptocratic
created,
or plutocratic. Right?
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh.
That has created the groundwork for this sort of thing, which is, and anyone who says that the right has just come about suddenly is, has
and
clearly
I mean,
not read
part of the reason. Part of the reason why we cannot escape our present nightmare is because that nightmare 10 years ago was just so damn nightmarish.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
So it's not even that they
and the crazy part is like, I'll give you a great test case, right? I don't know if you believe this, but UPA 1 was great. What it did between 2005 and 2007,
yeah.
Be very specific, 2004 and 2007, was immense.
The right
to information. I mean, the list is not endless, to be frank.
Sure.
It's a very short list. But at least we have these two. You don't have any of... And then UPA 2 did this, whatever it was.
Lethargic, like almost self-serving kind of this thing. Like where
it was very clear.
You remember Rang De Basanti? That film?
Oh man, I have a great Rang De Basanti story.
Which
but
is
anyway.
No, but I think like it was representative of the country's mood that there was such an insulation between the ruling class and the people. Like that is why it stood
right.
out because it was true on a level where it give you goosebumps even now. Right?
And so isn't it lovely to see right wingers go like fuck Rang De Basanti because Amir Khan is in it? Because that's a thing.
Oh my
that
God.
Is a thing. And
that
and
level
again,
of IQ, that level of IQ makes me want to like stop doing what I do and just like become a comic man.
Man, don't become a comic. Do anything with And yeah, man, Rang De Basanti, exactly, man. And you know, I'm very open about my public. Like we're discussing this also. Like I like to maintain as little distinction between my personal opinion and public opinion.
It's very hard.
As possible. It's very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's some things that I will even correct later on.
I almost feel like it's better to omit than to commit in public. You know, like politically. Even throughout this conversation,
yeah.
I won't give off what my political leanings are at all.
No,
I'll talk about that caveat. Yeah, but as soon
with
as the mic's off, you and I can talk about my political leanings and I can shit on whoever I want to shit on then.
So the caveat is that if I choose to speak on an issue,
yeah, right.
What I choose not to will be an omission.
For sure.
If I choose to speak on an issue, then I will try and, in that specific context, I will try and not, I will try and speak how I do personally with the circle of trust that
sure.
I'm around.
For sure.
which I don't know if it's a great idea or not, because that circle of trust is a very founding, you know, that's where that argument belongs. But let's see where it goes.
Yeah, right. So Rang Debasanti story.
Rang Debasanti. Man, I was in Priya's, Vasant Vihar Priya cinema, which is one of the only people, Anupam or this, right. Bunk karke ja rahe school.
Right.
So it was me and there was a bunch of kids from Army Public School because we're all Army background. And we're watching the movie and man, I have never felt the way I felt while watching that movie.
Right.
At that point of time, I've never felt it. I've felt it since, likely. And we're sitting and GD Goenka ke bachche piche baithe. And this is not a shade on GD Goenka kids. Of course it is. But but in the sense that, let's be real. And you know, it
the
was
epicenter
so
of
it was
entitlement, huh?
It was like, you know, it was also the dynamics of bunking. Huh. You know, like, jab hum bunk karke jaate the, I was in DPS RK Puram, but my friends were all in APS. So I would bunk out of DPS and my friends from APS would join me. And we would all bunk together. And we'd do all the nefarious stuff that one can do. And then that day we decided to watch a movie. So we're sitting and when GD Goenka or modern bachas used to bunk, there would be you know, a nice scattering of women with them. And we were all just dudes.
Yeah. Really?
Boss, I really feel that I have pioneered a couple of things in life.
Hey, how long ago did you graduate from DPS?
Mentioning.
How long ago did you graduate?
I graduated in 2007.
2007. Acha, theek hai. Right. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Go on.
Hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if that's a long time ago, but and we were just sitting there and we were watching the movie and the GD Goenka bachas are right behind us. And you know, we'd bunk every day and there was this tension, this social tension between these groups. And it so happened that on Rang Debasanti day, we were all sitting and we had front seats and not because of lack of seats, by choice.
Yes.
By compulsion.
Do, yeah, right.
By compulsion. You know, money and everything.
Yeah.
And the GD Goenka kids had sat behind us. And of course, this, I think back to it sometimes when I feel like it to whimsically think about it. I'm like, "Inne ye seat ke liye thi." So, hum log aise na ek seat ke piche baithe na, hall largely khali, kafi log hain. Aur wo scene aata hai where Madhavan dies and his mother is brought the trunk.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, my grandmother went through the same thing. So, for me, it is very close to her. And, you know, and I've just romanticized my grandmother's story also to an extent. And I was really, really living that moment. And everyone else was as well. And by the way, all of those APS kids now are on the other end of the political spectrum, as opposed to me. They're all like,
right-leaning. You
know, like what I find to be very reductive.
Right.
Pakistan, wo photo laga rahe social media pe Pakistan ke flag ko aise marte hue August 14th. Like, kya point hai? But anyway, so, but... See how allegiance has changed, how life changes.
Right.
And I'm sitting there and these guys are behind me and they're talking and they keep talking and they're throwing popcorn at us, just for whatever reason. Boss, that movie was not even, I think, half-time bhi nahi hua tha. You half-time ke aspaas hi hota hai. I think when the interval hit, there was a whole fight in Priya cinema. I don't think they've ever faced that kind of thing. So we were like 28, 30 kids. And these guys were like 8-9 dudes. Right? और हमने उनका मतलब क्या है पुलिस तो नहीं आएगा ना स्टैट्यूट ऑफ लिमिटेशंस शुड अप्लाई बट मैन वी हैड सच अ फील्ड डे विद दोस किड्स एंड आई फेल्ट रियली बैड अबाउट इट एट द एंड बिकॉज़ नथिंग गॉट रिजॉल्वड बट इट वाज जस्ट वन ऑफ दोस थिंग्स वेयर द मूवी इज गोइंग ऑन एंड पीपल आर जस्ट गोइंग एट ईच अदर स्प्राइट फेंक रहे के मुंह पे ठीक है समबडी सेइंग तू पैसे गैदर कर हम पॉपकॉर्न खरीदेंगे हम इन पे भी पॉपकॉर्न फेंकेंगे एंड देन सम गाइस गोइंग लाइक पैसे क्यों वेस्ट कर रहे हैं पिटाई करते हैं ना
लाइक दैट्स अ शॉर्टर सॉल्यूशन ओवरऑल
क्लास डिस्टिंक्शन यू नो वेरी ग्रो अप एंड यू नो आई हैव यूज्ड दैट एग्जांपल इन वन ऑफ माय क्लासेस दैट आई टीच यू नो इंटरप्रेट आई यूज्ड टू टीच यू नो लाइक हाउ टू लुक एट क्लाइंट्स हाउ टू लुक एट क्लास हाउ टू लुक एट द पर्सन दैट यू आर डीलिंग विद इन फ्रंट ऑफ यू एंड जनरली व्हेन वी वुड लाइक हैव दीस discursive classes in the middle of everything. What do you feel about politics in the country? And people would have different points of views. So I always use this example to come back and hopefully this time for sure wrap up those ghosts is basically this, right? We live on many levels of abstraction, right? There's something called the reification fallacy. which is that we tend to abstract notions from our life, symbolism or, you know, notions of identity. And we tend to give them such precedence in our life, depending on where we are in our life, that they occupy center stage. They become the seat of our experience, right? They literally become the seat. They are unchallengeable, right? It's not even what you're thinking sitting on the seat. It is the seat itself.
And I lens think, becomes the person.
Exactly. The lens becomes the eyes. Mm-hmm. You know, it mm-hmm. becomes the ophthalmic, whatever.
Right.
What is that bloody thing called?
Right.
Whatever. And I feel that that has changed so much for me. And I've done such a... I've been such a person to have thought back and gone like, achha main waisa tha, achha main aisa hun, ab main aisa hun, tomorrow I'm going to be like that. This was my experience in Berkeley, which we spoke about for like, you know, ad nauseum. But in India, I feel that I'm a different person. That's why whatever has gone on between us, at least to the point of clarification. And again, it's not just ki log dur rahe mujhse, but it's just my honest truth. Is that I don't think a lot of that applies in India. And to the extent it does, to the extent that there are 8,000 people on Clubhouse listening to Group A as opposed to stories of Keshavananda Bharti or any other case, I feel that let those people, you know, it's a function of technology, it's a function of class privilege. And it might not just be class privilege, it's also DBA activists who come onto it. I feel that that interaction for me is not as important as the basic questions in this country, which are basically questions of transparency and accountability, you know. And I think all of that has gone out the window. And I was with UPA too, with the scams that were breaking out, with the Neera Radia tapes, everything that we hold these people to account to today. Why do we hold them to account? Because all of these things came out. Mm. We don't know any of this anymore. You know, and for me, that is a bigger problem. And what are, and these are just symptoms, you know, there's institutional decay in India. There's always been institutional decay. But I feel now that the narrative of that institutional decay has been appropriated in a manner that further institutional decay is allowed in the name of transformation. You know, so for instance, when the planning commission stopped publishing yearly reports, annual reports, biannual reports, and
so
what have you.
Let me see if I understand this, because like I probably do, but my viewers might not. And just for the sake of it, are you saying that now, earlier institutional decay would happen, everybody would shout, nobody would do anything, we would find that we were living in some kind of an autocracy almost, where we were waiting for the 5 years to end so we could heavily vote in somebody else. Now, institutional decay happens under the name of transformation. And
yes,
we find lack of accountability being slipped in, lack
exactly.
of transparency being slipped in, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
And what we have is also the weaponization of an idea that people don't fully understand, which is that you can have things that become better. And you can have things that become worse, right? And you can have that on a first principles basis. Like, for instance, I understand the idea that for a lot of people, like my dad says this often, he says, you don't understand. People who like the prime minister like him because he has brought a politics, at least, you know, in terms of optics, what reaches them, not optics, their perception of it, that suddenly politics can be uncorrupt, you know, can lack corruption, at least insofar as that figurehead symbolizes, you know, which is never the case. It has always been a case that,
but
you know,
imagine the PTSD from corruption, right? Like, bro, I was way too young when this was happening. I was 16, 17 when the Ombudsman movement and like wo jo pura Anna Hazare wala scene tha. But, oh my, Western media reported on this happening. The farmers' protest happening as the most significant, you know, revolt or revolution or whatever they were calling it, a protest in the history of the world, something along those lines. To an Indian mind, to me still, that what happened 10 years ago, 10 odd years ago under Anna Hazare is probably way more impact because it still exists in our mind.
Perfect example. Hmm. Perfect example. I'm sorry I'm being discursive, example of what we're talking earlier. Levels, right? So the farmer protest to the left is this great movement, blah, blah, blah. But who's leading it? Who is Tiket? Who is Rakesh Tiket? The guy, the main accused in the Muzaffarnagar riots. Where is that discussion? Apart from one caravan piece, I've never seen it. And I've never seen anybody tout that piece as if, oh my God. But he's an ally.
Right.
Apparently, everybody's, coagulated around. So again, levels of analysis. So for the left, it's ki this is so great. This is like coming from a deeper level. You know, farmers are protesting. Hmm. But essentially, it might be real politics is where you want to place your faith. Hmm. But whatever is the reason, the left does not place its faith like that. I mean, it's not just left. It's a romanticization of politics appropriated by the media and furthered by the media.
Right.
Similarly, on the right, will think, oh, the India Against Corruption movement. What a movement, blah, blah. Everybody knows. I mean, anybody who's been closely associated with the movement, or even not closely, who's read the movement closely, knows where the funding came from, knows what was the end goal, really, who were the characters in play. And one of the unintended results was obviously Arvind Kejriwal entering into politics. But anybody who's followed Arvind Kejriwal's graph in politics or outside of politics and activism, and trust me, the ones who followed it are mostly on the left, will tell you that if there was a man who could have gone sideways and laterally and somehow extracted value out of it, Arvind Kejriwal.
What do you mean by that? Because that's a very ambiguous statement. I didn't follow any of it.
I mean, to be very honest, Arvind Kejriwal was towards the end of his, from what I know, and you know, I'm subject to correction, whoever's going to correct on that in the comment section.
You'll find many 17-year-olds with opinions.
Arvind Kejriwal he's not very well regarded in the in every organization that he's been at, and neither has his Sisodia, neither has his right hand.
I don't know about Sisodia, but I have some overlap with Kejriwal's past circles of engagement, and so I've heard.
Right. So I used to. I mean, this was only symbolic because I did not do half the work that he did. I laud people for the amount of work that they put in. Be it Modi ji, be it Rahul Gandhi, be it Arvind Kejriwal, you need to be committed to what you do. I'm committed to the law and being a lawyer, but not so much this. But one of the jobs that I had taken earlier, and we were discussing this earlier about, you know, how I've switched many jobs and tried to explore everything, was to take up a position in an organization which Arvind Kejriwal had also headed. And I was not heading that organization, but I was one of the co-coordinators, whatever it's called. But roughly the same, you know, the same position, except the context had changed.
Right.
This was the, and I did not hear very good things about him even then, you know, but their level of analysis is probably very, very romanticized, you know, but he's a good politician at the end of the day. So I feel again, the IAC movement or the farmers' protest, we tend to look at what we want to look at. You know, we're very easy. We're very convenient to what we don't want to look at. So
you
people like us
yeah.
who want to discuss this stuff, who want to talk about, yaar, isme ye problem hai, ye hai. So that's why I say I'm a contrarian. I'm an oppositional character. I might not be the perfect ally. I have privilege. And maybe that's why I'm contrarian and oppositional.
No.
I'm willing to admit to all of that. I am saying at the end of the day, and to close this, is that look, I have my own personality. I have my own seat of observation. That seat of observation, in turn, you know, owes a lot to what my family gave me, what my caste gave me, what my class gave me, what my sexuality gave me, etc. I'm fully willing to believe that. Obviously, it's the truth because otherwise I'd be locked into other issues. There's a reason why I am where I am. There is also my effort on top of that, which has been interested in these issues. And effort not in the sense, oh, I have toiled. It's just been my interest. And I'm willing to believe both context, both the importance of personality in it. All I'm saying at the end of the day is that leave me alone to have my point of view. Don't, and from the left, it becomes more of a different kind of ad hominem. It's more identity-based attacks. From the right, it is all kinds of, it is like asymmetric warfare. It could be anything. It could be any day. And I feel that that is the problem. And I feel that the people who are in power should be held to greater account than the people who are not in power, as a rule of thumb, right? So it is very clear to me that when I sit back and I'm writing a post, and kudos to wokeism, kudos to that I actually feel that, oh, there might be systematic response to this. And I try not to say it. And then I, whatever discussions we have. But on the right, it is very clear. It is like, oh, these are the people in power. If I say something against them, my position as a lawyer, my position as garnering client, you know, as a person who needs to garner clients, and just generally, even my, you know, my personal physical safety, sometimes I feel a little,
bro, ki maine kya bol. Haan, yaar, you are spot on. Like, I'll give you a very subtle example. and I'll point it out on your behavior, and I'm going to then extrapolate it to the country at large, and then we're going to talk about something very important. Because the right often assumes that they can laugh at the left for playing all these language games where language becomes more and more intricate or more and more like facile in a way where, you know, but I do not see one right winger who can call Modi Modi. They have to say Modi ji. Not just them. Everybody around them has to say Modi ji. In fact, to the point where we have to internalize the word ji after Modi as if they come together in the name, because otherwise you are not... Right? And it's like...
Except Abhiji.
I don't know. Does he? He does not say that. Does he say ji as well?
He says Modi.
He says Modi. Yeah, he'll say Modi because he's twisted like that. But most people you'll find have that deity kind of a relationship with the prime minister. Where, you know, the politics becoming a religion is kind of like, you know, it's closer to it. And so this is not no shade on Modi as a character or as a prime minister, but on the followership that has resulted underneath this grand marketing campaign that is inevitable in politics. You've created...
Which is orchestrated.
Yeah, it's so, I mean, they would like to take the credit for all the good things. We might as well shove the credit for all the bad things, because I agree. People in power need to be held more accountable than people not in power. And if my 25-year-long short life can teach me that, because I saw what the last government did to us and I've seen what this one's done over the last 6-7 years, it should be evident to you too. Ask more questions to power. And I understand you need to support power for power to function properly. Like, I'm not taking that away. In fact, if you look at the parliament, it's pretty supported to power right now. This is probably the first time in so many years it's pretty supported to power. So we, as people, might as well take the job of the opposition right now. And I'm just saying, if we become unwilling to admit the flaws of people who control us, inevitably, we are going to go into decay and abuse. And it's not a statement on the Indian polity or a specific polity. It's a historical fact. We've seen that there is a reason why the French Revolution happened. If people don't remember the kind of statements that were made at that point. But anyway, so I see all the entire argument that you're making. And I think it's a mature argument. When you say, leave me alone to have my point of view, please. So I can be one of many who has a point of view, and then maybe, you know, it can get into a kind of a discussion instead of policing me on what I can say and what I cannot say. And you're right. The left has like identity barriers. The right has intent barriers. Towards me, the most criticism I see from the right, it'll always be to the effect of like, as if I'm like, my intent is not in the place to support what is happening. It'll always be like, iska intent hai kuch destroy karne ka, kuch niche se carpet khichne ka, right? And I'm like, nahin yaar, main sawal pooch raha hun, bro. Mere se dugni umar ke log, twice my age, I can see it in their profile pictures on YouTube, have the time and audacity to come and shit on me in the comment section on YouTube. And I'm like, you have to be extremely free and triggered to write down a paragraph on a 25-year-old who you cannot care about. I'm not even big enough to shit on right now. Please spare yourself the misery and spare me the laughter, because you're making a fool of yourself. And it's like, and there's like 17-year-olds, 20, all varieties of left-wingers and right-wingers that have harangued me almost at to a point where I've had to sort of admit to my political affiliations, sort of had to talk about stuff here and there. And it comes back to what we started on yesterday, when we spoke yesterday about how like politics is beaten out of well-meaning people. Well, when you're only trying, you're not trying to force anything. You're only trying to present your interpretation of the world to many people. An earnest and honest approach is just not possible. Not in the times of Twitter, not in the times of faceless YouTube comments, and not in the time of like, just, well, we see what happens. We see what happens when vigilantes take up social media space and when comics are being stupid and stuff like that. Like at that point, there's nobody winning that battle. Everybody's losing that battle.
See, I think... Sorry, go on.
No. I had...
No, but I do feel that... See, there is a... You don't have to always be earnest. Again, it comes back to that. If you're performing... If you're performing in the real politic sphere, lair, do that. Right? What social media has done, it's confused all of these things. Yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And maybe something good will come out.
No.
But...
No, let's not be that hopeful. Let's be pessimistic on that. Huh?
Okay.
Huh. No, I'm just joking.
Okay, great. Because then that's the end of it.
I might be a fatalist in that way. Where, you know, like somewhat of an accelerationist too at points. Where I'm like, theek, accelerate this process. Let's get done with this social media fad so we can then go back to having normal conversations.
But as Seneca said, right? He said that a true sage will let the system destroy itself.
Right. The acceleration.
And maybe that's... And again, that's... From a point of privilege, that's an immense, intense statement.
But again, I don't think in Seneca's statement, privilege is the same as in the modern times. What he's saying is
it's not even being considered, right? Yeah. It's not even being considered. That's the point.
I mean, because soldiers would assume that war is their privilege, you know? And in that case, the sage is the underprivileged one because he does not get to die for a reason. So, like, you know, you have to be a little more careful how privilege plays in. It's not...
Layers.
You can't deal it out. You can't be like, that is a zero. Like, you know, that's a constant with value, but that value has to be assessed properly. And its political implications more so. Like, you can't be casual with that.
We must be aware. I think what social media has done is destroyed those layers. The neat academic institutions make baat chal rahi hai. Parliament make baat chal rahi hai, media ek baat dikha rahi hai, hum log ek baat kar rahe hain ghar pe. I think what social media has done is connected all of that in a manner. And now we're trying to negotiate that reality. And I don't even understand if we have fully understood what it meant to live in that time. You know, what it meant to be operating at different levels. Ki aap office mein ye keh rahe hain, ye keh rahe hain. I'm okay with that. Trust me, I'm completely fine with people saying one thing on the dining table, one thing in their profession. Theek hai yaar. As long as it's mediated by the basic principles of dignity, that's what liberals are supposed to fight for.
Yeah.
You know, that say what you want, do what you want, right? But let it not come to a point where it actually ends up impacting someone in a manner where it, you know, whatever, transgresses on their being, on their life and liberty.
Sure.
That's the essential idea, right? And now if that idea is going to be packed in, it's like a co-packer situation, iske saath ye bhi dal diya. साथ में ये पैकेज डील है कि आपने अगर इसका बात किया तो आप प्रिविलेज का भी बात कर रहे हैं. सो दैट्स द लेफ्ट प्रॉब्लम. द राइट प्रॉब्लम बॉस, लाइक आई थिंक हूएवर डजंट सी इट,
दे आर फाइटिंग,
इज परफॉर्मिंग, राइट? हूएवर, दैट्स व्हाई वी हैवंट डिस्कस्ड इट. दैट्स व्हाई आई एम नॉट वेरी इंटरेस्टेड इन डिस्कसिंग इट, बिकॉज़ आई फील दैट जिसको नहीं दिख रहा उसको नहीं दिख रहा है, मतलब वो नहीं देख रहा
ब्रो,
बिकॉज़ द प्रॉब्लम इज वेरी क्लियर.
इफ यू वांट टू सी द रिलक्टेंस ऑफ द राइट, मोस्ट ऑफ अस कैन सी इट एट आवर होम्स. All you have to do is have a skeptical mind, present contrarian evidence to your family members and see their reluctance to just move even an inch. Like, they'll absorb it and they'll even probably be like, haan, ye galat hai, and then they'll go back to square one the next day.
Yeah,
and
so, like, they have a whole different way of dealing with shit,
yeah,
dude.
Yeah.
They're just like, ye lock hi nahi hai, ye chicken hai.
Like, wo, and...
Ab tum kaise argue karoge?
I know what you mean exactly. Also, about contrarianism, before it gets linked to privilege, because I think it's such a stretch to link contrarianism to privilege. You pick up those instincts when you're a child where concepts of privilege are not, like, where concepts of distinction are not that real. Right? I think contrarianism is more...
What of people who say, sorry to cut you off, but just to ask you a question. What of people who say that while you might not be aware of it, the nurturing aspect that's happening between 1 and 6 is really in the context of privilege. So while you might not be aware of that privilege, it is only unique to privileged upbringings that you grow up in that manner. And therefore, it is incumbent on you to conduct that meta-analysis at some point,
either by yourself. Too much effort. No, thank you. Right. But I'll tell you what it is. I think it's an adaptive strategy where you realize very often that groups make bad decisions. And you can pick that up very often playing games with your friends. Where if everybody wants to do something, eventually it's going to get either boring or it's not going to have fruitful. And so it's almost like this adaptive thing where you're like, if the group's saying that, there has to be something wrong. Because when all of us are thinking, our combined IQs are below 10. Right. It's this is legitimately, if all of us start thinking, we're not thinking straight. The best thinking you do is by yourself. Right? Or maybe in a group of 2 or 3 people. So, like, because I feel that contrarian instinct. I've always
It's not
had
even
that.
About best thinking, yeah. It is about thinking.
Thinking.
Why can't I think for myself?
Yeah.
I don't want to ascribe any social value. Right. That's what I'm saying. I want the freedom to not participate while thinking about everything that people are participating about. Now, to that, the left says, well, think about it, but the minute you platform that thought,
You're participating.
I mean, get that.
Bro, I'm glad they're not saying just thinking is political for you, right?
I get that.
Yeah.
But what are the terms of analysis of what I am saying?
You can't do that ad hoc from this incompetent place that you're doing it, right? Like, you can't just be...
My intent does not matter. My upbringing does not matter.
None of that matters.
Or it matters, but it's been caricatured.
My end goal does not matter. I'm not an honest person. You know more about me than I know about myself.
And to be honest, this is not affecting me, right? I'm having this podcast with you. So, bahut log ye bolte hain isliye. Now, I have to put the caveat there because a lot of people will say this. Because tomorrow people will say, oh my God, what a big problem this person is facing that he has to talk for hours. I'm not facing a big problem. I'm sorry. I'm just addressing a niggle.
Right.
I get that.
Bro, that's just putting words in your mouth. That's just like an unfair way of dealing you away. You know?
Yeah. I'm just saying, yaar, please.
Straw manning. Wo sab straw manning hai.
मेरे को खुजली हो रहा है मैं खुजली कर रहा हूँ यही बोल रहे हो ना तुम
राइट
कि मैं खुजली को हार्ट अटैक दिखा रहा हूँ मैं नहीं दिखा रहा हार्ट
मैं खुजली की बात कर रहा हूँ यार खुजली की बात ना करूँ मैं लाइक व्हेन पुश कम्स टू शव नो आई गेट दिस पार्ट ऑफ माय पर्सनालिटी आउट दैट इज जस्ट लाइक फक दिस मेरे को जीने देना राइट लाइक यू फाइंड दिस
खुजली क्यों कर रहे हैं
क्यों मेरी मर्जी है
क्या करेगा हाउ कैन यू रिड्यूस इट टू अ खुजली
आई विल टेल यू ट्रू प्रिविलेज इज
यू प्रखर गुप्ता आर यू प्रखर गुप्ता
या
trying to be the person who is trying to downplay the experiences on
of
the
people who have heart attacks.
Whatever this is and calling it a khujli. So you're trapped
with me. I'm just talking about my khujli.
Na heart attack bol sakte ho na khujli.
I'll tell you, true privilege is being huge in size. Because when people can't pull this off in front of me, bro. People don't pull this off while I'm standing in front of them. I'm big and I'm looking down. And at that point...
Way. Dude, sorry.
That's what I meant, bro. What the fuck?
Like, this is some big dick energy, bro.
No. You know why I know that? Because, bro, yahan to koi confront nahi karta sadkon pe, yaar. Wahan to sab sadkon pe confront karte hai na, America mein. Like, I got confronted for being first Israeli, then an Israeli sympathizer, then friends with racists. I've gotten confronted for like so many things just like in classroom and on the streets. And even like physical assault. Of many natures that I've learned to toughen up to that. As soon as somebody's walking towards me in a confrontational way, I just guard up. Like I just...
How are you getting to go back to Colombia?
Bro, because I'd never reported to the police.
Well,
also, like I'm very provocative when it comes to people I don't trust. Like if I understand your intent is to fuck with me, no, I will fuck with you. And we can have a fuck off contest.
Big
until
problem.
Big problem.
Because I have that too.
Yeah, I know.
Big problem.
You personally enjoy it, but then you regret it.
Yeah, man.
You're like,
it's like a sober hangover.
Why? Yeah.
Why have I written a passage to this bloody person?
Bro, that got beat out of me. Like, you know, my friend was saying the other day on Twitter, there should be a thick skin course for creators on social media, especially opinionated creators, right? I get so much shit that... Like, so many times I'll just type something. I'll be like, you are unhappy. And that's all I want to tweet at somebody. But then I'll delete it. I'll be like, chhodna kyun bhav dena isko yaar. So, like, I know what you're saying.